today as we come to the table.
What's really neat is the 12 days they gave me in jail, I was working during the week, and so I had to go on the weekends, you know, doing the jail time on the weekends. And you weren't allowed technically to take your guitar in. Well, I brought my guitar anyway. You know, nobody said I couldn't, and they let me bring it in. And so we would get in there each weekend and sing worship songs and share the Lord with people. And we saw guys give their life to Christ there over those times, those weekends we were in there. And so that was one of the most exciting, fun times of my life for those 12 days in jail in Nashville. I'm not joking. You think I'm kidding? It was one of the most exciting 12 days of my life because God was in control and because the Lord was moving.
Pastor Mark is sharing a story of the days right after his conversion, when he ended up spending time in jail because of crimes he committed before he came to know Christ. Most people would look at jail time as a horrible event, but Pastor Mark followed the example of Paul and used the time to worship. Well, thanks for staying with us today as we come to the table, the daily Bible study program of Pastor Mark Kirk of Calvary Knoxville. What are you facing right now? Pastor Mark was facing jail time, and he used it to worship and lead people to Christ. No matter what you're facing, God can and will use it for His glory. He will use it for His purposes. Open your eyes and watch Him work in the middle of the hardest circumstances. He knows what He's doing. Now, let's join Pastor Mark in the book of Acts chapter 23 as he continues his message. God's not done yet.
Just because you failed doesn't mean it wasn't God. Maybe it was just not God's timing, like Moses. Moses heard God say, "Step out, Moses, save my people." Moses stepped out before God told him to, 40 years too early. That's quite a bit of a miss there. But the bottom line is, he stepped out too soon and it fell flat on its face. And Moses could have said, "I give up." As a matter of fact, Moses did say, "I give up." And God called him again and brought him back. And some of you might be in the "I give up" mode. Well, God is calling you back. He's saying, "I'm not done with you yet. You're not dead yet. You're still alive. You're still breathing. Now, you may be a little bit sleepy, but you're alive." It's interesting. I had somebody tell me, "Hey, Pastor, if you ever see me out there and I've got my eyes closed, just know that I'm praying." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you on that one, right? All right." Makes him feel better, makes me feel better too. But the bottom line is that you don't have to worry about hitting rewind. Start where you are right now and move forward. I read about a young teenager in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho this week. I don't know that it happened this week, but I read about it this week. There was a call from the police that someone was driving through their neighborhood, all over the neighborhood, backwards. And so they called the police. The police show up. They find this girl driving her car backwards through the neighborhood. They stop her, thinking, you know, they're probably thinking she's drunk or something. And they said, "What in the world are you doing?" And she's this panicked teenager. She says, "Well, here's really what happened. I got to tell you the story." She said, "Mom and Dad let me borrow their car, and I drove more miles than I said I would drive. So I'm trying to run some of them off." Now, you know that doesn't work. You can't drive in reverse and get those things to rewind, so to speak. And listen, as much as I would like to drive in reverse and remove a lot of the mistakes I made in my past, it doesn't work. Driving in reverse never works. It only takes you backwards. Is everybody with me? The Bible says, "I am moving forward to the upward call of Jesus Christ, leaving the past behind, but moving forward to the upward call." We're not called to live in the past. We can't live in the past. I've never dug up a corpse that didn't stink. And I haven't dug up any corpses. You're looking at me funny.
"What did you used to do, man?" You know?
No, I'm just saying, the bottom line is, guys, we're called to move forward. And some of you guys are living in the past. It's time to move forward. And some of you guys are thinking, "You know what? I just need a second chance. All I need is a second chance." Let me tell you something. God will not only give you a second chance, He'll give you 1,000 chances. If you'll continue to go back to Him and ask forgiveness and try to get it right, God will give you chance after chance. Football season coming up, I found this story quite amusing. There was a coach who was afraid one of his star players would be academically ineligible. As a matter of fact, it looked like he was going to flunk math and not be able to play. And the coach was panicked and said, "This guy needs a second chance." So the coach met with the professor and said, "Is there anything we can do to keep him on the team? Is there any way he can pass?" He said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do." He said, "If he can just answer at least one thing right, I'll go ahead and pass him, and we'll worry about getting his grades up later." He said, "Bring him in, bring him in." So he brought him in, and he asked him, he said, "All right, young man, I've got one question for you. What is 2 plus 2? And the young man said, 4. And the coach panicked and jumped in and said, oh, please give him another chance. Please give him another chance. You see, you don't even have to be smart to be used in the kingdom of God. The bottom line is, guys, you just have to be available. Be available. Paul was available. And although Paul was feeling defeated, no doubt, and although Paul was feeling discouraged, God was saying, Paul, I'm not done with you. I've still got a work to do. And that's where we take up here in verse 12. Notice what it says. Paul sitting in jail in Antonio Fortress, getting ready to be transferred to Rome, him not knowing that, but God telling him. It says, and when it was day, some of the Jews banded together, and they bound themselves under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. Now, this is a pretty major, you know, oath to take. And understand a little bit of Jewish history here. The Jews had different oaths and vows that they would take. And you could take an oath and a vow that was legally binding before the religious leaders, and you had to fulfill it. This was that kind of vow. They literally, in the language, it says, let us be cursed by God. Let us be anathema, which is used in Scripture in other places, of eternal condemnation if we don't kill Paul before we eat again. Now, you guys know historically these must have been pretty hungry guys for a long time, because Paul lives for many more years after this. And of course, they had a way they could get out of these vows, go before the priests and then kind of devow them or whatever the case might be. And I'm sure they had to do that. But why do I bring this up? Because God had just promised Paul that he was going to protect him at all costs and get him safely to Rome, where he would be a witness and continue his ministry there. These guys just took a vow. We're going to kill Paul. We don't care what it takes. We're going to ambush him. We're going to kill him. We'll see the story they come up with in a moment. But what is my point in this? Listen, until God is through with you, you're not going anywhere. And if you step out in ministry to serve the Lord, or whether it's just living normal life, God knows our days. God knows our time. And God is not going to let anything happen until it is that time. He had a promise from God. And Paul now realizes that, but he doesn't realize this plot is in place yet. These guys don't know that God's protecting him, and they're going to try to kill him, and they're going to fail miserably. Look at verse 13. It says, there were more than 40 who had formed this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priests and the elders and said to them, we have bound ourselves under a great oath that we will eat nothing until we have killed Paul. Isn't it amazing? Paul had done nothing wrong. He was simply loving them, telling them the way to get to heaven. And now we see these religious zealots who didn't agree with Paul's viewpoint, or God's viewpoint, I should say, in the Word of God, wanting to actually kill him. And guys, again, when you make a stand for the truth and you're in the midst of a hostile environment for that, these can be the consequences. And yet again, we're going to see that God is faithful to protect Paul, although these guys take this vow. And now they come up with their plan. Look at verse 15. Speaking to the council, they say, now you, together with the council, suggest to the commander that he be brought down to you tomorrow, as though you were going to make further inquiry concerning him, but we are ready to kill him before he comes near. In other words, you just get him from his prison cell toward meeting with the Sanhedrin again. We're going to ambush him and kill him, all 40 of us. Now, they would have known the Roman guards would have been protecting Paul. They would have realized that. They were willing to give their lives in order to kill Paul. Isn't that amazing? Again, you can see the level of hatred that they had for the gospel. And even today, the level of hatred some people still have for the gospel. They'll do anything to try to stop it. That was these guys. They were doing whatever it took to shut Paul up. God says, no, it's not going to happen. So you set him up. You bring him down. We'll kill him. And look at verse 16. So when Paul's sister's son heard of their ambush, he went and entered the barracks and told Paul. Now, this verse is very interesting and actually struck me different than any time I've ever read it or studied it. And I've studied through Acts numerous times, even taught through it more than this time. And what's interesting to me is to see Paul's family getting involved. Now, why do I say that? This was Paul's nephew. I don't know whether Paul's sister knew the Lord. I don't know whether Paul's nephew knew the Lord. I don't know if anybody else in Paul's family knew the Lord or not. But I do know this. When Paul received the Lord, he was rejected nationally and religiously in Israel. The Sanhedrin said, anyone that believes in Jesus Christ, you're kicked out of the synagogue. And that meant kicked out of the temple. And that meant kicked out of the national life. You couldn't participate in work in Israel anymore. You couldn't participate in the feasts of Israel. Now, Paul did. And of course, it caused a riot when they found out about it. But the bottom line is, you couldn't participate in anything. You were disowned by the nation. Can you imagine doing something in America that the nation would disown you for? Some people have experienced that. This is where Paul is right now. But it wasn't just a national disowning. Most people in America who are disowned by some atrocity they've done, or have, as the nation might view it, at least their family still sticks with them, or at least in many cases. Probably in Paul's case, that would not have happened. Because when you received the Lord and you turned away from Judaism, you were rejected even by your family. So Paul was rejected by his nation. He was rejected, no doubt, by the majority of his family. But I find it interesting that God left someone in there that still cared about Paul, his nephew. Now, I don't know whether, again, his nephew knew the Lord or whether his nephew just said, hey, I heard this plot being made and I don't want to see my uncle get killed. You know, I may not like what he's doing if he was an unbeliever, but I don't want to see him get killed. And so I'm going to go and I'm going to tell him what happened. But again, notice this. He comes there and he tells Paul in the barracks what takes place. In verse 17, then Paul called one of the centurions to him and said, look, take this young man to the commander, for he has something to tell him. So he took him and he brought him to the commander and said, Paul the prisoner called me to him and asked me to bring this young man to you, and he has something to say to you. And then the commander took him by the hand, went aside, and asked privately, what is it that you have to tell me? Now, it's interesting. Notice he took him by the hand. Why do I find that interesting? Because no doubt he was still very young. Had this been a grown man or probably even a teenager, he probably wouldn't have taken him by the hand. It would have been probably an awkward situation to do that. Come with me, young man. I'm like 40. Let go of my hand, okay? What are you doing? But the bottom line is he was probably young, so he grabs him and he takes him in there. And this is what's neat to me is look at the courage of Paul's nephew. Say, hey, they're going to kill my uncle. I got to get in there. And he goes in there and talks to these commanders, and the commander pulls him aside and says, this is pretty cool. This young man's willing to come in and talk. Come over and tell me what's going on. Now, let me point something out here. This may look like a natural occurrence. Some of us might wipe our brow and say, Paul got lucky, huh? Listen, when it comes to the believer's life, there's no such thing as luck. God intervenes in our life in every way, in every avenue, God intervenes. And God allowed Paul's nephew to hear this conversation, to hear what went on, to be able to go to the commanders and to get Paul released. This was a very supernatural event that happened in a very natural way. And that's something as believers I want you to take note of. God is working in our lives in very supernatural ways. Some of you may be here this morning by a supernatural means. God brought you here because you needed to hear that God's not done with you yet. Because God wasn't done with Paul. And God chose this day to bring you to Calvary Chapel, Knoxville, so you could hear this message because you were starting to think, God's done with me. God never wants, okay, I'll go to church. Someone invited me. And maybe someone invited you. Maybe that's why you're here today. Maybe you just came to check out to see what this new church was. Whatever the case is, God brought you here is what the Bible teaches. And he has something he wants to say to you. And God is letting you know that he's not through with you yet, and he has a design and a purpose for your life. It is a supernatural event that happens very naturally. And you have to recognize, well, wow, did God really intend me to be there? I mean, so-and-so invited me, and I just went. Yes, God intended you to be here. And we need to realize God's hand in the believer's life and or the potential believer if God's drawing you in. So God was involved in every bit of this. And he says, all right, what is it that you have to tell me, young man? Look at verse 20. And he said, well, the Jews have agreed to ask that you bring Paul down to the council tomorrow as though they were coming to inquire more fully about him. But do not yield to them, for more than 40 of them lie in wait for Paul, men who have bound themselves by an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they've killed him. And now they're ready, waiting for the promise from you. I mean, this commander realized how fanatic the Jews were. And when he heard that they had taken an oath to kill Paul and not to eat until they did, he realized, hey, they love to eat and they love to take oaths. These guys were going to try to kill Paul. You know, they're going to show up and they're going to run him down. He realized this was a very serious situation. And so notice he kicks into gear. Verse 22, so the commander let the young man depart and he commanded him and said, tell no one that you've revealed these things to me. He didn't want word to get out because he wanted to sneak Paul out of there at night and get him all the way driving through the night and up to the next morning into Caesarea where the headquarters was for the council who would handle this situation. And so notice he called two centurions to himself saying, prepare 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen to go to Caesarea at the third hour of the night. Now, several things to note here. A centurion, century means 100. And so a centurion was a soldier in the Roman army who was over 100 men. So he calls two of these guys to represent. He says, you get your 100, you get your 100, you gather some other men, some spearmen to come as well. We're going to surround Paul with 400 to 500 people, and we're going to transport him overnight up to Caesarea because there's some people here trying to kill him. Look at God's hand protecting Paul. Now, no doubt it wouldn't have been a pleasant ride on the back of this horse all night long with your hands in chains and half falling to sleep as, you know, the bounce of the horse kept you awake, right? But God puts all these soldiers around him on all sides, protecting him. And again, remember, God has his forces all around you, protecting you and keeping you until it is your time to enter the kingdom. And Paul's experiencing this in a very real way, in a very physical and a very visual way. And so he calls these centurions. He brings them together to watch after Paul. And notice it says they go the third hour of the night. In Roman time, that would be 9 p.m. in the evening. Of course, he wanted it to get dark first. And they would travel through the night, which again would be a very difficult, geography-wise, a very difficult travel. They would have been exhausted to go all night. But the commander knew he had to get him to Felix before the next day and before the Jews could get a hold of him to kill him, because he knew they resolved to kill him. And notice he said in verse 24, provide mounts to set Paul on and bring him safely to Felix, the governor of that region. And he wrote a letter in the following manner. Now, whenever you sent a prisoner, a Roman prisoner somewhere, you had to send a letter telling why you were sending them. And then you had to send the charges in the letter as to what they'd done. The problem is there were no charges against Paul. Paul had done nothing wrong, and so he can't really send a charge. But he probably was no doubt glad to get rid of Paul and kind of get him off of his hands, because he didn't know what to do with him. Every time Paul spoke to anybody, a riot broke out. And so now he's deciding what to do. They want to kill him, so he's probably happy to get rid of him. And notice he wrote the letter in the following manner. Claudius Lysias, to the most excellent governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them. Coming with the troops, I rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman. And when I wanted to know the reason they accused him, I brought him before the council, that is their council, the Sanhedrin. And I found out that he was accused concerning questions of their law, but had nothing charged against him deserving of death and chains. In other words, before their law, he was guilty, they said. But as far as Roman law, and he's a Roman, I have no charges to tell you about Paul. Paul didn't do anything wrong that I know of. And when it is told to me that the Jews lay in wait for this man, I sent him immediately to you and also commanded his accusers to state before you charges against him. Farewell. Now, I know this is probably just the standard way to end the letter, but it almost felt to me like, he's yours now, you know. Farewell, do with him what you will. He's out of my hands. And he sends him on to Felix, who was the governor of that region. Just for a moment here, think of Paul's mindset. Paul's in Jerusalem, discouraged. God encourages him, lets him know he's going to Rome. Paul finds out there's a bunch of Jews that have bound an oath to kill him, and Paul knows what it's like to have a Jewish oath. He used to be a member of the Sanhedrin. And so Paul realizes these guys are really committed. Unless they protect me, they're going to somehow get to me and kill me. And now I'm going to be judged by Felix. You see, Felix had a reputation in that region. Why? According to history, Felix was the only known, at least all that we know of historically, the only known slave that had been promoted to a governor. He wasn't raised in the kingly ranks. He didn't know how to govern. He wasn't trained in governing, if you will. And so how did he get there? Well, apparently his brother, a man by the name of Paulos, was best friends or good friends with Emperor Nero. And so Paulos went to Emperor Nero and said, hey, I've got a brother here by the name of Felix. He used to be a slave. He's now a freedman. Back then you'd be a slave and sometimes become a freedman. He was a freedman now, is what they called him. And he said, could you make him a ruler? Could you get him in government? Could you give him a position? Emperor Nero made him the governor of that region. And so he gets raised up from this position. The problem was he was not a very nice guy. He was known to be very cruel. He was known to be very heartless. He was known to be very mean. And he was the kind of person that you wouldn't exactly want to stand in front of if he was your judge. And now Paul is going from, as they say, from the fire to the frying pan or whatever. The bottom line is it's already hot here in Jerusalem, right? And now I've got to travel up here and stand before Felix, this wicked governor. What's going to happen? The good news is Paul knew what was going to happen. God has promised me I'm going to Rome. God has promised me that I'm going to be taken care of. And so God is going to do it. You know, it's interesting, guys. Here's the point. It doesn't matter who we stand before on this earth. If we give our life to Jesus Christ, God is the one that will move in their heart. The Bible says God moves the hearts of kings to the left or right and sways them. We went to Nashville, Tennessee yesterday. My daughter wanted to go to Nashville to celebrate her birthday, so we went to Nashville to celebrate her birthday. And as you guys know, that's where I gave my life to the Lord. You've heard my testimony, many of you. And it brought back a lot of memories. As we were walking around downtown Nashville, I can remember being in Nashville and getting in all kinds of trouble in Nashville and having to get a lawyer in Nashville and seeing the buildings and remembering the places that I had to go to get out of my trouble in Nashville. But I'll never forget when I stood before that judge. It was about a year later after I'd given my life to the Lord. And by then, I knew the Lord. The church knew me. The church was praying for me. It was through that experience of getting in trouble in Nashville that I'd come to the Lord. And so the whole church was praying for me. And it was a really interesting experience, because as I stood before the judge, I knew that it could be a pretty big consequence. At that time, for what I'd done, you could lose your license for a full year. You could spend a full year in jail, and you could have a very large fine. I forget what the fine was up to, et cetera. But the bottom line is, I remember standing before the judge and thinking, you know, hey, here's the bottom line. And they're going to ask, how do you plead? Of course, the natural thing, oftentimes, I want to say not guilty, right, to try to get out of it. I knew I was guilty. And so I said, Lord, I'm going to just trust in you to move in the heart of this judge. You said you move the heart of a man to the right or the left. I'm just going to stand up there. The whole church is praying for me. I had great peace. I stood before that judge, and he said, guilty or not guilty? I said, guilty. And he just kind of looked at me like, wow, you just told me you're guilty. He's kind of looked at me for a minute. He said, here's what we're going to do, $800 fine, 12 days in jail, and, didn't even mention the license. Now, that was the first year that you were to lose your license. If you were busted for DUI or whatever, you lost your license for a full year. They let me keep my license, which is really neat to me because I was still able to drive to church. If they'd taken it, I couldn't have gotten to church back and forth. But the bottom line is, guys, when I stood before that judge, I recognized there is a greater judge than the one I'm facing. And he's the judge of all the universe. And if I give my life to him and totally entrust myself to him, he will move even in the heart of the earthly judges and the earthly people to do what's best in my life. And whatever that judge on earth was to say, I was like, Lord, I deserve probably this and even more. So whatever you lessen from it, all the better. What's really neat is the 12 days they gave me in jail, I was working during the week, and so I had to go on the weekends, doing the jail time on the weekends. And you weren't allowed technically to take your guitar in. Well, I brought my guitar anyway. Nobody said I couldn't, and they let me bring it in. And so we would get in there each weekend and sing worship songs and share the Lord with people. And we saw guys give their life to Christ there over those times, those weekends we were in there. And so that was one of the most exciting, fun times of my life for those 12 days in jail in Nashville. I'm not joking. You think I'm kidding? It was one of the most exciting 12 days of my life. Because God was in control and because the Lord was moving. And I recognized that God had rescued me, and I was filled with joy, and I was excited, and a whole new life was started. Listen, this is where Paul is right now. Paul is like, God, I recognize that although these guys want to kill me, although I'm going to stand before Felix, who hates you and everybody else around him, I still trust in you, God, to take care of me. And we're going to see that God did take great care of Paul. And now look at verse 31. We've got to finish quickly. Then the soldiers, as they were commanded, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris, again, which is about 25 miles still away. They kept on traveling. Those guys went on back. The next day, they left their horsemen to go on with him. Whether or not there was a short stay or not, I don't know, but they traveled to get him there quickly. And they returned to their barracks. So part of them went back. Part of them went on with Paul. And when they came to Caesarea and had delivered the letter to the governor, they also presented Paul to him. And when the governor had read it, he asked what province he was from. And when he understood that it was Cilicia, he said, I will hear from your accusers when they also have come. And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's Praetorium. Now, this is interesting to me because I've seen the remains of what they believe to be Herod's Praetorium. And if they're correct, this place was a palace. It was beautiful. It had this great area right on the Mediterranean Sea, had this beautiful area with a swimming pool that went right out to it. And you still see the foundation of it right out there to the Mediterranean. And I'm not saying that Paul was out there laying next to the pool, sipping on little drinks with umbrellas in them. That's not the image I'm trying to give you. But because Paul didn't have any specific charges, they had different ways they treated prisoners and different levels of treatment. Paul would have been one of the high-treated prisoners, where he would have had nicer quarters and not been treated that bad. And what's exciting to me about this is although Paul was falsely accused and had to spend a couple of years there or more there in Caesarea, God gave him a beautiful place to stay and God took care of him. Now, what is my point in this? Guys, listen. God will not only protect you in what he's called you to do until it is your time to go home, God will actually bless you in the midst of it. You may go through hard times, but God also has special surprises for you along the path. All God wants is you to commit to the Lord and to trust him and to give your life to him. See, Paul recognized this. God is not through with me yet. And you know what? Some of you this morning, you need to recognize that. God's not through with you yet.
The New Testament book of Acts may sound like a simple Sunday school lesson, but it's so much deeper and richer than that. This book consists of remarkable men and women who risked and even lost their lives for the sake of Christ and his salvation. They got it. They came to a realization that nothing in this life would offer them something better than what Jesus had freely given them. They couldn't help but proclaim what he'd done for anyone who would hear. They even counted it joy when they were persecuted for the sake of Christ. What an example for us to look at, and to be in awe that we can be warriors for Christ as well, in our own sphere of influence. If what you're doing is for Christ and helping the gospel progress, then it's worth it, no matter the cost or loss of earthly things. If some of this sounds unappealing to you, we'd be happy to talk with you and pray about what's weighing on you related to what you've heard. You're welcome to give our church office a call at 865-609-1385. Again, that's 865-609-1385. If you're in the Knoxville area, please come and join us at Calvary Knoxville. Go to thewaymedia.net and find the link at the bottom of the homepage to get service times and directions. If you'd like to hear more teachings from this series, you'll find them in the Come to the Table section on thewaymedia.net or download the Way Media app. Pastor Mark has more to share next time, so join us again as we come to the table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.